1 Chronicles 29, this is the account of David giving a huge amount of wealth, I guess pretty well all his wealth, to the work of God's house, which in our days is not, of course, a physical temple, but the work of God's kingdom, the work of God's people, the house that he has built in the Lord Jesus. And he says some wonderful words here, verse 14, "Who am I, and what is my people, that we should be able to offer so willingly as this? For all things come from you, and of your own have we given you, for we are strangers before you and foreigners. Our days on the earth are as a shadow, and there is no remaining." So, he repeats it again, verse 16, "All this store that we have prepared to build you a house comes from your hand, and is all your own. I know also, my God, that you try the heart and have pleasure in uprightness," and the context is testing our motives. "Yahweh," verse 18, "God of Abraham, keep this forever in the imagination of the thoughts of the heart of your people and prepare their heart for you." I think the NET Bible gets it right. Maintain the motives of your people. Maintain the motives of your people. So there's a lot there which is very relevant to us. The first thing is that possession is an absolute myth, that I've got what I have because I worked for it, and it is therefore somehow mine. This is the delusion, particularly of capitalist societies. I went to uni, I got educated, I swatted away at night school studying, and therefore I got a better job than the guy next to me, and I didn't waste my money on this, that, and the other. I invested shrewdly. I got on the rung of the property ladder. No. It is not yours. And this is so difficult to understand. It runs, of course, completely against the grain of our natural secular thinking, and totally, this is radical nonsense in the eyes of secular society. But this is the challenge. All things come from you, and of your own have we given you. That nothing, absolutely nothing, is ultimately ours. And of course, you only have to think through the logic of your own mortality to realize that, because you're going to die. And what you have earned and hoarded up shall not be yours, because you shall die, and it will be given to somebody else. And who knows, as Solomon says, if he's a fool or a smart guy. And David connects this idea of giving generously with the idea of our mortality. See verse 14, "All things come from you, and of your own have we given you. Our days on the earth are as a shadow, and there is no remaining." So he's connecting generosity to the inherent mortality of man, because our inherent mortality is proof enough that actually you do not actually own permanently what you have got. You've only got it for a very short time, because what is 70 years in the perspective of eternity? It is just nanoseconds. It's hardly to be counted. And so, as Paul puts it, we brought nothing into this world and we can carry nothing out. So again, he connects this idea of generosity and resigning all idea of ultimate ownership. He connects that with our mortality. And I think Job realized that when he says that we enter this world naked and we return naked, as if he's saying that all his wealth, he likewise, although he lost it at that point, he's saying, well, but so what? Because you can take it with you anyway. I'm sure we've all heard, possibly encountered, people who have made their wealth in this world, but then what do you do with it as you get older? Well, you give it away, don't you? It seems that even atheists and secular people are very good at doing that, because I guess it just dawns upon you that I can't take this with me. And you might as well get that idea straight earlier in your life, that this is not mine anyway, so what's the point in going mad to try to accumulate it and then considering generosity to God as if, well, I'll give him a bit? This is what is totally wrong with taking tithing in its wrong way. There is nothing wrong with tithing, But where it is wrong is if you consider that all I owe to God is 10%. No, all of it is His. Well, God says through Malachi, you're robbing me. And yet they say, well, since when are we robbing you? And he says, will a man rob God? Will a man? Well, we're robbing God if we assume that actually what he's given us is not his, it's mine. And you see this in little children. You start to give them a little reward for what they've done, cleaning a room or whatever, and this is mine. Not yours. Well, yeah, but mum and dad gave it to you, right? But we're the same. And people don't get it, run up to their grave planks, that this is mine. And it's not yours, God, it's mine. No, it is all of him. And even if you reckon that by dint of your own sharpness of mind and dint of hard work and lack of laziness, self-control in your spending and so forth, that therefore your wealth is yours, well, all those things, self-control, intelligence, hard work, being in the right place at the right time, that you were born in the family, the situation that you were, well, all that's from God. Anyway, there's that higher hand that you didn't have a road smash and you avoided it by centimetres and you'd have been 6 foot under by now, way back, but for God's grace. And so will a man rob God? Well, people do. And this is what the problem was when they returned from exile. They came back from exile looking for good harvests, prosperous life, etc. Eli and his sons were the same. They kept parts of God's sacrifices for themselves. And God says, you trample upon my sacrifice and my offering. You're trampling upon what is mine by saying it's yours. Now, this is very, very radical stuff. Because let's face it, most people don't have serious time for the gospel and the things of God and his kingdom because they're caught up with my career, my job, my wealth, or spending my wealth, or whatever. All that becomes such an item to them. And David, in fairness, does realize this in these wonderful words that he says here. And he goes further and he says, who am I and what is my people that we should be able to offer so willingly as this? Who am I to have all this? This is the idea. You could say, well, David, after all he endured, I mean, the guy deserved it. No, we don't deserve it. People say about folks who spend tens of thousands on very high luxury holidays, you deserved it. No, you didn't. No, you didn't. None of us deserve it at all. And this is a totally wrong idea. And as, again, the scriptures point out, men will praise you when you do well to yourself, as the psalm says. Yeah, men do praise you when you do well to yourself, but that's the praise of men, and it's not the praise of God. And he seems to be saying that God actually had given him and his people the desire to do this. That's also why he says, who am I and what is my people, that we should be as willing as this to offer. And that's why we saw in verse 18 in the NET Bible, maintain the motives of your people. God gives you motives. God opens your eyes to this understanding that I've just outlined. If you want your eyes to be open to it, God will keep them open. God will maintain your motives because he works directly on the human mind and on the human motive. This is the whole purpose of the gift of the Holy Spirit, to work on our motives and our minds. If we are willing, God will not force you. Man is not a puppet controlled by God, with strings being pulled that force you to action involuntarily. We are not sort of on autopilot. And yet, if we genuinely desire to get the spirit of these things that the Bible is explaining here in very clear terms, God will maintain your motives. And also, as he says, be aware, I know also, my God, that you try the heart and have pleasure in uprightness, and in the uprightness of my heart I have willingly offered all these things. Now have I seen with joy your people offer willingly to you. So there is joy from giving. This is the whole point, that true joy is from giving and not from storing for yourself. It is more blessed, or you could read, it is more joyful to give than to receive. if you're given something by another person, well, don't you feel slightly awkward about it? Don't you feel, oh, thank you, oh, yeah, that is very nice. Maybe a pretty superficial person who is really so permanently joyful, you might be happy in the flush of sort of the unexpectedness of the gift. But that's just the cusp of emotion. The real joy is in giving. You bought somebody something that they use every day. You bought somebody in a poor country just a little place for them to live in. Might have cost you, by your standards, a very small amount of money. But they got somewhere to live. And, wow, that means so much. Now, Jesus obviously talks a lot about these things, and he says, give to Caesar that which is Caesar's, and to God that which is God's. And he says that after he's looked at a penny and says, whose image is this? And they say, Caesar's. Oh, give to Caesar that which is Caesar's. This penny has got his image, give it to him, it's his. But give to God what is his. That is, whatever's got God's image on, give it to him. And what's got God's image on? You. We are made in his image and likeness, and therefore we are his. Now, this takes the whole thing about ownership beyond money and wealth. It takes it to your own body. It takes it to you, that you are his. You're in his image. You are his. And yet there is this desire for sort of radical ultimate freedom, that I am master of myself. No, in this life you are not. In some sense, we shall be delivered, Paul says, into the glorious liberty of the children of God in the age to come. As Jesus says in one of the parables, if you've not been faithful in that which is another man's, which is what you're given in this life, then how shall you be given that which is your very own? That is a profound statement. The idea is that all that we have in this life is another man's, it's God's, and it's given to us on the basis of stewardship. And we are to basically give it back to him, not keep it for ourselves. Otherwise, you're the man who keeps the talent, as it were, in the ground, wrapped nicely, but kept. So all that we have is another man's, and we are stewards, not owners. And yet we shall be given that which is our very own. Well, sure, it's still a gift. You don't get it just ultimately yourself. You do not create it. But I think there is there a whiff, a hint of the nature of our eternity, that it is going to be the ultimate freedom. You will then be given that which is your very own. It will be ultimate autonomy, although it will be a gift from God. And that autonomy shall be eternal. And the nature of that autonomy, I think, depends on how you use what you are given now. You are given it in stewardship, and you are to use it for him, and not even to congratulate yourself on your generosity, because you were giving back that which in any case was not yours. Now, this gives you a huge freedom. If only you can grasp this, you will be free indeed. Because most people are laboring under this illusion that I must own, I must accumulate, I must have something that I can say is mine and my very own. And when I've got it, I'm sure not going to give it to anyone else. Well, no, you are free from that treadmill, which is what it is. Whether you are fantastically rich, fantastically poor, it's all the same. It's a mentality problem. And we are free from that. We are absolutely made free when you realize that all that I've got is from him.